98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Big League Blast.
The Arizona Cardinals are cutting edge. They are the latest NFL team that has turned the omnipotent, all-powerful head coach into a glorified offensive coordinator. They're the latest to realize that an offensive coordinator is a waste of resources when your head coach is in charge of calling the plays and developing the quarterback, but they're pushing the envelope like a few other teams ever have. But here's where they messed up big time. Their third most important hire for this football team was running backs coach, because David Johnson is just as broken as the team's rush defense. They interviewed Stump Mitchell, the guy who can reach Johnson, a candidate that excited Johnson so much that he posted enthusiastic emojis on Twitter. Mitchell ended up signing out with the Browns after interviewing with the Cardinals, and you know how Arizona could have prevented that? By making Mitchell their offensive coordinator, distorting that position just like they did with the head coach. And that is the point, folks. If you're gonna get weird, if you're gonna try something completely different, you have to embrace it fully. After all, we're already on board in the Valley. Their previous hire made sure of that. All right, today's Bickley Blast, every Bickley Blast brought to you by Chapman BMW. Two great locations, one great experience. Visit them online, chapmanbmw.com. All right, we have got interesting times in the National Football League because we've got a great weekend of football ahead. I am so stoked for these games. Generally, I look at championship weekend and I can you find some warts on the beauty queen, if you will. You can find some things you don't like, a permutation you don't like. This weekend, I don't see anything. Just goodness, okay? And then we'll have a Super Bowl in Atlanta, and then this offseason is going to really kind of kick in full gear. And this offseason, I believe, is going to be unlike anything we have experienced in Arizona, because the Cardinals, like the Suns, never had the number one pick in the draft. Certainly not when they've been in Arizona. So I think the tone of what we're talking about is going to begin to change, all right? But this idea of putting together a coaching staff piecemeal based on who's available, who's in Steve Keim's contact list, with very little resistance and maybe even very little input from Cliff Kingsbury, is remarkable to me. Basically unprecedented. To me, the big loss in this coaching search was Stump Mitchell. If they were thinking about it, I think they should have made Stump Mitchell the offensive coordinator. Is he ready to be an offensive coordinator? Of course not. But that doesn't have to be the job. You could be the offensive coordinator and be in charge of the running back, because you've got an offensive coordinator who's now head coach.
Excuse me. Quote unquote run game coordinator, something like
that.
We've seen other, I don't mean to disparage Stump. Great Cardinal player, has been a successful coacher in the past. I don't think that's that big of a loss either.
Well, I'm only saying it from the standpoint, I don't think that Stump Mitchell is, you know, a Josh McDaniels type either. But David Johnson really believes in him. And David Johnson needs to get right, because he ain't right. And he wasn't right last year. And he was super stoked about Stump Mitchell. And then Stump Mitchell signed on with the Browns. It's a minor quibble, but if the Cardinals were really thinking visionary, that's what they should have done. They should have valued Stump Mitchell, because David Johnson did. And David Johnson needs, clearly, quality of coaching, people who reach to him, people who get him to do what he should be doing. I think coaching really matters to David Johnson.
I'll disagree, and from just on, if they operated under that realm, if that's the way they made their hires, we're going to get Cliff Kingsbury to, quote-unquote, fix Josh Rosen. We're going to get Stump Mitchell and elevate him to a position that he may or may not be ready for, to help, quote-unquote, fix David Johnson. How many individual coaches can you hire for individual players?
Mm-hmm.
It's a staff. It's a football team. There's 53 players. David Johnson will be fine. I think more of the problem was the offense, the scheme. Mike McCoy's not here, although he did get an interview in Jacksonville, which was crazy. I think that'll fix it more.
Why are you so certain David Johnson's going to be okay? Did Byron Leftwich do anything for David Johnson?
No. Did Byron Leftwich have the opportunity really to do anything with David Johnson?
Probably not.
No.
Probably not. I think a lot of what David Johnson is doing that's hurting him is stuff that's going on between his ears. And it's not so much schematic as it is just not as running as reckless or aggressively. And we talk about the jump cut all the time. They need somebody to get David Johnson back plugged in. I mean, fully plugged in. So that's what I would have done with this, because then you would have had Stump Mitchell. But to me, it's really just kind of like, that's if you're going to get weird and you're going to get cutting edge with it, then just go all the way with this. Now, in the case of the Arizona Cardinals, and I sketched this out today, we talk about this number one pick in the draft and what this is going to mean to this football team. We've seen other teams have the number one pick, not need it, and trade it. We've seen the Bears give up a boatload to get to number two. The 49ers got fat selling their draft pick 1 year. This would be a great time to do it.
Uh-huh.
Is there a player that is going to prompt another team to climb the ladder all the way to the top of the draft? Right now, I don't see that player, because that player has to be a quarterback, in my opinion. And I don't see a quarterback there right now, as of yet, that's going to check that box. Which, I want to bring this back to Kyler Murray for a minute. Because I've seen early mock drafts right now that suggest Kyler Murray is not even a first-round draft pick. Kyler Murray, there's a couple of dates coming up. February 15th is a date when Oakland A's position players are scheduled to report.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to see if Kyler Murray shows up. Where he's going with all of this. Is he going to show up in Indianapolis for the combine? Is he going to show up in Arizona for the Oakland A's? If he sticks with football and goes to the combine, Kyler Murray has got an incredible skill set that he could conceivably start to really soar. And we've seen guys who start to soar go all the way to the top. And you're like, look at it and you go, how did that guy get there? But they do. Kyler Murray has got all the skill, all the athleticism to do that based on what his size is going to be, his height is going to be. Kyler Murray looks like a baseball player. The University of Oklahoma, 2 days ago, released their official measurement on Kyler Murray. I don't know if you saw this. The University of Oklahoma lists his height 5'9 and 7/8". Okay.
So that means on planet Earth, he's 5'6".
I'm 5'9 and 3/4". Okay. So Kyler Murray, and that's my legitimate height. 5'9 and 3/4".
You might as well say 5'10 at that point.
I do. Friend. Believe me, I do. But if I'm being honest about it, it's 5'9 and 3/4". So Kyler Murray is effectively, according to the University of Oklahoma, my size. I'm not big enough to play quarterback in the NFL. Okay.
But he's not your size. You also have no talent.
And I also have no talent. But I have a good arm. But I have no. Yeah, right. But
I've seen you throw the ball from third base. You do got a good arm.
I've got no wheel. I've got nothing else to bring. Okay? So.
You heard what Dave Pasch said, that that Murray's even
this
smaller.
This is where I was going to go. If you've got the sound, play what Dave Pasch had to say.
I'll be really interested to see how he measures, because I've stood next to him. And I mean, is he 5'8"? I mean, I don't know how he's going to survive in the NFL, much less be the number one overall pick. He's got these really small shoulders. I mean, he looks like a baseball player. That's what he looks like. You know, he's got these small. I mean, look, he can sling it. He can play. But I'd be shocked if he went that high because of those measurables. You know, yeah, Russell Wilson is much bigger. I mean, I stood next to both guys when they were in college, and Russell Wilson is much bigger than him.
I hear all of this, and I'm not going to sit here and say that there shouldn't be concerns about his size. I just know what happens, especially in draft classes that are not loaded with quarterback talent.
Yeah.
These guys, I mean, go back to the 2011 draft. How many of those guys got elevated?
Mm-hmm.
And that was thought to be a good draft. I mean, Blaine Gabbert, Jake Locker, Christian Ponder, they all went high. Johnny Manziel elevated to a first-round pick.
Yes. And if those guys can do it, Kyler Murray can get all the way to the top.
Because you hear people, he's the most electric athlete at the position we've seen since Michael Vick. That's high praise. That kind of stuff resonates with people. And we've spent a good portion of today's show focusing on the Cardinals thinking outside the box and trying to change their model a little bit. Other teams are doing this too. I think the days of requiring a quarterback to be 6'5", 240 pounds, those days are over. Not to say that you won't have guys that size playing the position, but if you can play, you can play, and Kyler Murray can play. I will sit here and say January 16th, if Kyler Murray stays in this draft, he will be a first-round draft pick. Although, I heard Burns and Gambo talking about this yesterday, too, and this made me think even more on it. Let's say I'm wrong. Let's say he slides out of the first round and the Cardinals have the first pick of the second round, number 33 overall, by virtue of being the worst team in the league. They use the term a much more movable pick at 33.
Yeah.
And if he does fall, then you would see some teams that, and there will be teams too that say, we would never move up to the top of the first round to get somebody like that. Well, let's see what happens. Teams are a lot more willing to gamble with their second round pick, even if it's one pick out of the first round. They might be able to find a trade partner that really wants to get Kyler Murray at 33.
I feel like 30, 31, 32, though, is much more in play there. Because once it gets to the end of the first day and he hasn't been picked yet, that's when the teams are going to start panicking. I can't see them waiting an entire another day to move up to get him if he's still available.
Yeah, and again, I think Kyler Murray is going to crack the top 10 easily.
Now, do you think he'd have better draft prospects if his signature pass was called the Hail Murray?
Could be. But here's the thing. Okay, and to hear Dave Pasch say, look, I've seen Russell Wilson. I've been next to both these guys, and there's no comparison. Russell Wilson's much taller, and that's frightening, okay? And Dave Pasch is not prone to hyperbole, except when evaluating the 2018 Arizona Cardinals coaching staff, like I was. I'm in the same boat as he is. But I look at this and I say, all right, but let's look at what he does on a football field. The old saying, if you're good enough, you're big enough. Kyler Murray's size did not impede him from playing incredibly well against Alabama. How much different is Alabama's defense versus an NFL defense? I know it's different, but how much?
I mean, for one game.
There are differences, but it's not like he had a one game.
Yeah, okay,
He was dominant all year. He won the Heisman Trophy.
But he's the best athlete, whatever, since Michael Vick, is what you said?
His ability to throw on the run is unlike any quarterback I have ever seen
in my
life.
But let's look at some of the other people who were the best since Michael Vick. Robert Griffin III, Marcus Mariota. Those kind of players, once they get to the NFL, they have to change the way they play a little bit. It feels like every time.
Yeah. But a lot of those guys, they were when you talk about even Michael Vick, I think, broke through because he was the complete package for a while, and he was so devastating as a runner. RG3 was just too much runner and not enough thrower, and he was also just weirdness.com. Okay? Couldn't lead anybody because everyone's like, the heck's the matter with this guy?
His biggest problem was the injuries.
Okay. Yeah,
because he was brilliant his first season, throwing and pass. I mean, he was the offensive rookie of the year that year. His biggest problem was, and this could certainly apply to Kyler Murray when you talk about the size and the frame. He was RG3, comparatively speaking, to other quarterbacks, slightly built guy.
Uh-huh.
Didn't have the frame to hold up. He's never got his hands on a starting job ever again. This whole theory of next, looking for the next, and the Cardinals are getting killed for it. Looking for the next Sean McVay, they hire Cliff Kingsbury.
Mm-hmm.
This happens all the time. Kyler Murray is very much benefiting from, in a really close example of it, now teams are looking for the next Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield's not a very tall guy. I mean, he's taller than Kyler Murray, but looking for somebody that had that success at the college level that has that dynamic skill set.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield's performance as a rookie in Cleveland has only elevated that. The fact that Kyler Murray put up comparable, if not better, numbers than Baker Mayfield in the same system at Oklahoma adds to that. I don't blame anybody who moves up and is looking for the next Baker Mayfield, if that's how you want to term it. That's what you do in pro sports, and he might be the guy, he might not. But I do believe that if he stays in this draft, he's a first-rounder. when it's all said and done.
I don't think there's any doubt
about
it.
Unless something shocking measurement-wise comes out, like he measures it at a legit 5'7"
okay.
and 150 pounds, then all bets are off.
And here's what I don't get, and maybe they will do this, but there was so much talk about Cliff Kingsbury's comments from a few months ago, and he's sort of brushed them off since then. If you're the Cardinals, why don't you go to Josh Rosen and you say, you're the starting quarterback, okay? But we're going to play a game for the next month, the next 2 months, and we're going to say we're really interested in Kyler Murray because we have the number one pick, and we need to make that more valuable. So why not feed into all the stuff that's being that people are trying to make a story of this? So why don't you let them make a story of this?
No. Yeah.
Play the game.
Yeah, that to me is going to be very important here, is to grow the interest around the player that's going to prompt some team to jump up and take the number one pick from you. And generally that has to be a quarterback. I don't see Nick Bosa as good as he is. Team's not going to jump up to one to get him. I don't think. Ed Oliver? No, it's not going to happen. Maybe Al Oliver, Oliver Twist.
We've done this before. We don't know enough
Olivers. Oh, we have. That's right.
We don't know enough Olivers. We
that's
get
right.
stuck
we
after
have.
Like
that's,
three.
It's a good point.
Oliver Platt. all over tan. Okay. No, this is the perfect year for Kyler Murray to be doing this as well.
Because, without a doubt.
I mean, Dwayne Haskins may or may not be the best quarterback prospect. He is right now by default. But if this was last year with that deep class and those prospects, Kyler Murray's playing baseball.
So, right. No,
Or going back to school.
You're right. The question becomes, can Kyler Murray become the number one pick in the draft? That's the most pertinent question for the and it doesn't seem probable now, given...
Or Haskins.
I don't feel it with him. I don't see that. No. Kyler Murray is different, and I believe he's different, and he's going to have to have a Jamarcus Russell combine, but in a different way than Jamarcus did. Jamarcus did it by throwing the ball 6 miles and by being a big physical guy and all that stuff.
And also by the Raiders having the number one pick.
Right. Good point. Kyler Murray is going to have to do it with just crazy athleticism, which he can do. But it's going to be that measurement that's going to either make this plausible and possible or make it impossible. Because some teams are going to look at that and go, okay, that size is too much risk. Even though you're talking about 1 inch.
We've had where do you think Josh, somebody just tweeted this question.
I saw this same tweet. I think this is a fascinating question, but go ahead.
The one, if Josh Rosen were to have come out this year, where would he be in the draft?
I think he'd be the top quarterback.
He would be.
You think so?
I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But not a lot of great quarterbacks coming out. But like I said, the Kyler Murray thing is the wild card. It's the wild card. Josh Rosen, had he stayed in school and come out this year, he'd have it all. The experience, it would have been different than Kyler Murray, in my opinion.
All right. Let me just reset.
Then there'd be no mistakes for him to.
The stories, other stories with the Cardinals today. John DeFilippo is officially the Jaguars' offensive coordinator. That great coveted position.
Yeah, apparently chooses Jacksonville over an offer from Arizona. Brings me back to the Michael Bidwell point. The Jacksonville Jaguars have an opportunity for their offensive coordinator to be the play caller. John DeFilippo finds that attractive.
Mm-hmm.
He'll probably, if he has any level of success, he probably won't be in Jacksonville again next year. So the Jaguars, they get the guy they want, obviously, but they've also opened themselves up in the scenario that Michael Bidwell painted out with Burns and Gambo last week. If you're an offensive minded head coach and you are not the play caller, it creates this opportunity for somebody to come in and poach. Somebody can come in and poach John DeFilippo now moving forward.
Yeah, it's true.
And the Cardinals don't
That's
have
right.
Cardinals,
That's
regardless
right.
if they hire an offensive coordinator in name, if they don't and they go with run game coordinator, pass game coordinator, some kind of trumped up assistant coach title, they don't have that same issue to worry about. That's one thing to consider. Do you have other stories you're resetting there, Jarrett?
Well, just that a name that
Tom Clements.
Yeah, Tom Clements. That I had never even heard of him before, and he was not a name that was rumored for the offensive coordinator position. Apparently, he interviewed, and to me, at least, that seems more likely of a type of guy that will get this job. Right? Not a hot young name, not a hot assistant name, but somebody who is okay with coming in and just being a coordinator and not a play caller.
I think there could be merit in a hire like that. He's an experienced guy. He's worked with good quarterbacks. He's older, so he's probably not out there looking for that play calling opportunity like a young coordinator like DeFilippo would be. That could make a lot of sense. It was suggested by Ian Rappaport that if he doesn't get the OC job, that he still could end up on Cliff Kingsbury's staff in some offensive capacity. Because the Ben McAdoo possibility is still out there. The Jim Bob Cooter possibility is still out there. You know, I was shocked to find out Jim Bob Cooter's only 34 years old.
I had no idea either.
I
thought he was like a
late
40s guy.
Unless I got misinformation.
I thought he was like late 40s guy.
Because it seems like we've been talking about him for years and years, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Initially because the name was funny, but then he had some success in, 34 years old, July 3rd, 1984. I thought he was much older.
Yeah, Darren Gant, our buddy from, where does he work now? Pro Football Talk. Yeah, Pro Football Talk. Yeah, he's one of those guys that just will laugh for 90 seconds straight, just the sound of the guy's name. I mean, yeah, it's funny, but it's not that funny.
It's pretty funny.
Okay, it's pretty
funny. It's a great combination of first and last name.
Okay.
Like, if his name was Larry Cooter.
It wouldn't be the same?
Yeah.
It's still pretty funny. But I mean...
Jim Bob Jones.
Jim Bob is just such a...
Ding, dang, do.
Yeah.
It is almost ding, exactly ding, ding, do. Jim Bob Cooter.
Where did you come up with ding, dang, do?
You ever heard a Southerner speak?
Yeah, of course I have.
Well,
they always say that.
Ding, dang, ding, dang, ding, dang, do.
Have you subscribed to the Bigley and Murata podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android. And you'll never miss any of the show. It's the Bickley and Murata podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. Did Devin Booker's return to the Suns last night bring up bigger picture questions about the franchise guard? We'll get into that in a disgusting performance in Indianapolis next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
You can add another name to the Cardinals' list of candidates. I'm Erin Maloney with the latest from the Arizona Sports Desk, presented by MyGuy.com, Arizona's most trusted referral source. The Cardinals' search for an offensive coordinator continues. NFL Network's Tom Pelissero is reporting that the Cardinals interviewed longtime NFL assistant Tom Clements for their OC job yesterday. In addition, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, the Cards met with former Lions OC Jim Bob Cooter about the opening yesterday as well. So be sure to keep it right here for the very latest surrounding the Cardinals' coaching staff. On the court, the Phoenix Suns turned the ball over 19 times and foul trouble was once again an issue as they fell to the Pacers 131-97. They'll look to bounce back and put the loss behind them tomorrow night when they continue their road trip at the Raptors. And on the ice, the Arizona Coyotes will look to snap San Jose's 7-game win streak tonight as they welcome the Sharks to Gila River Arena. That one's an 8 o'clock start right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The latest is brought to you by Sonora Quest Labs, just what the patient ordered. With My Lab Request, you can order tests for diabetes, heart health, thyroid, and more. Without a doctor's order, visit SonoraQuest.com.
In a word, yuck. It's a good way to describe the Phoenix Suns and their performance last night. After all that optimism, they won two in a row at home. They beat two pretty good teams in Sacramento and Denver. They won both of those games without Devin Booker. Starting a road trip, yes, against a good team, but getting Devin Booker back for this trip. And it looked like day one of training camp.
Yeah, it did.
For the Suns last night.
It did.
Couldn't play any defense. 51% shooting, almost 52% shooting for the game for the Pacers. The Suns couldn't hit free throws. 9 of 18. Kelly Oubre inexplicably went 1 of 6 from the free throw line last night.
Mm-hmm.
Fouls were a problem. Turnovers a big problem. 19 turnovers leading to 29 points for the Pacers. The Suns are really good at the one step forward, eight steps back thing. I don't want to sound disingenuous because I'm excited when they do things well, but man, it's disappointing when they can't follow it up. And that's one of the things I really wanted to see last night is how they followed up their best performance of the year with days off. Yes, it's a road trip, but they basically been playing every other night for seemingly a month. They finally got a gap in between games, and they came out as flat as they've been. The score differential at the end of the first quarter was not as ugly as we've seen, Bick. 38-19, still ugly. But there's absolutely no excuse for it.
I'm with you. I'm with you all the way across the board. There's a couple things about this that really bother me, and I said some of this at the start of the program. And number one is, this late in the season, I have just had it with this basketball team and this head coach coming up after the game and saying, we were not ready to play tonight. I appreciate the candor. I appreciate the master of the obvious. But why is this happening in the end of January, especially when there have been nights along the way that speak to growth? And then you say to yourself, all right, Devin Booker coming back and us not being ready to play, are these things at all, are these just mutually exclusive weird occurrences, or is there some cause and effect happening here? I don't like that last question one bit, because I love Devin Booker as a player. But I've been wrestling with this for a while now. The difference between being a stat gatherer and a great scorer and a guy that is just hell-bent on winning and has taken everybody along with him, or inciting everybody to follow and run through walls for him. Maybe it's normal. Maybe I'm coming from a wrong place. Maybe it's normal for a team growing to have 9, 10, 11 nights in the course of an 82-game season where you don't show up. To me, these are 20-year-old millionaires making decisions once every week and a half to 2 weeks that, I'm not going to show up tonight. And of course, they're not looking in the mirror and saying that, but their play reflects it and their attitude reflects it. My feeling is, and I know you disagree with this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I really like Igor Kokoschkov. I admire him. I think he knows what he's talking about. I think his concept of what he unveiled on Doug and Wolf the other morning showed just how intelligent he is. I think he has got a communication problem. I don't think his voice commands the room. I don't think there's one bit of fear on that basketball team as it relates to what they do or do not do in regards to their standing with the head coach. And I think that's a big problem. That's what I think. Do I know it? No. Do I think it? Yes. My opinion and nothing more.
His voice as a coach has resonated for 18 years as an assistant. His voice as a coach in a head coaching capacity resonated enough to take Slovenia to a Eurobasket title. I mean,
European players, a lot different than American-born players, Vinny. You know that. They treat basketball as a job. They train all day and play at night. They have much more respect for authority than they do in America.
I just think, is Igor Kokoschkov the perfect coach? No, nobody is. But I think to suggest that is just another, it becomes another in a long list of excuses that these players come up with why they're not winning this time around.
That's
what was the problem with Earl Watson? He didn't have a communication problem. His voice carried.
He just didn't know what he was doing.
I mean, at some point, it's got to be up to the players.
They didn't win with Jay Triano, who was a veteran coach.
But did they not show up for Jay Triano the way they didn't show that they haven't shown up for Igor Kokoschkov? They're a better team than they were last year. Jay Triano had much more command of people, and he had much more. He had players. Okay, coach is mad. Okay, can't do this for coach. Jay Triano got Ryan McDonough to get Robert Sarver to back the truck up and not be around so much after games. Igor Kokoschkov is a softer personality than Jay Triano in a business where you need a big personality.
Here was Igor Kokoschkov in Indiana last night following the ugly loss to the Pacers on the team just not showing up.
Yeah, I would say we didn't show up. We didn't show up first quarter the way we opened the game. It wasn't really part of the game plan. You know, starting game, we had a couple defensive stops, so we didn't convert them into points. 10 turnovers, way too many. When you open the game that way, we were behind the whole game. So, didn't show up tonight.
That the sound courtesy of AZ Central Sports, by the way.
It's a shame they did that interview on a subway car in Manhattan.
At least it wasn't in a waterfall or in a well, which is sometimes where we get audio from around the internet. Specifically the Devin Booker question. Devin Booker comes back. Everybody thinks it's a great thing. Didn't turn out to be a great thing. Book had probably his worst game in 2 or 3 years last night. He finished 4 of 12 from the floor, 0 for 4 from three-point range, did not shoot a free throw, scored 8 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 fouls, 4 turnovers in 26 minutes of action. Jarrett put this out there, and we kind of had the discussion yesterday. We did have the discussion yesterday with Eddie House about Devin Booker fighting this thought around the league that he's not a winning player because of the team's win-loss records. Jarrett put it out on Twitter. Suns fans, is Devin Booker the type of player that makes his teammates better? Lots of reaction to it on both sides. Somebody just for sports tweeted us back and said, I've been saying no for a while and I get laughed out loud at. Mo says, if his stat sheet is a teammate, then yes. I mean, I thought Eddie had some really good things to back up, really good stance to back up that thought that Devin Booker is a winning player. Was he a winning player last night? No. That was a big problem. Nobody wearing purple uniforms was a winning player last night. It was a dog-like effort. Time out.
You're the guy, just like me, who got so angry at Steve Wilkes for saying the same thing every Monday and never fix anything. Why are you not mad at Igor Kokoschkov for constantly saying this team was not ready to play tonight?
Is what we saw last night what we see every time the Suns take the floor? Are we not coming off a gigantic show of improvement?
Isn't that worse?
Where was one show of improvement?
Isn't that worse?
No, that's not,
why not?
Worse.
Why not?
You're really asking that question.
If you're capable of beating the Nuggets without Devin Booker, why is it too much to ask that you come out and play hard?
I can't even dignify that with a response.
Well, why? What's so stupid about that?
Improvement's a bad thing. Got it. Let me put this down for further discussion.
You're suggesting that it is. No, I'm not.
You're suggesting that a glimpse or a show of improvement is worse than not showing any improvement.
Well, if we're going to credit the team for beating the Nuggets, can't we expect them to be professional enough to not have the head coach say, we didn't show up tonight, 3 nights later in Indianapolis?
I don't like hearing that. I would much rather say, we got beat by a better team tonight, we're going to move past it. It does get tiresome. I will agree with you there. It does get tiresome when you hear highly paid professionals come out and say, we didn't show up.
And maybe you're right. And there's a level of semantics here. But it doesn't matter what words he says. I think we all were equally disgusted actually watching the game last night. I don't think we needed to be told by Igor Kokoschkov that the team didn't show up to play. I think it was pretty evident in the score last night. Indiana's a good team. I don't agree with you that they can win the East, but they are deep. And you were right about that. I saw you tweet that last night. They are a deep team, and if you're not ready to play against them, they're going to come at you in waves and make you look bad. But to me, it's if you want to believe that this basketball team is turning a corner, that winning time is close, if not already here, don't do this. Don't play well at home against the Nuggets without your best player, welcome your best player back, and then go out and act like you don't care. That's all.
Well,
sick of it.
This is a team that we are going to continue to see fits and starts. We're going to see glimpses of hope, and then hopefully the bad performances aren't as bad as what we saw last night. You don't just all of a sudden turn it on when you're a team constructed the way the Phoenix Suns are. But referring back to the way that Jarrett phrased that question, is he the type of player that makes the players around him better? Rafa tweeted us and said, does Karl Anthony Towns, does Anthony Davis, does James Harden, which I don't think is necessarily a good example.
Yeah, a few people disagree with that one.
Russell Westbrook? Anthony Davis is ridiculous. What have the Pelicans done?
Nothing.
Nobody says Anthony Davis isn't a winning player. I know the Pelicans' record is better than the Suns. That's almost a given. Everybody's record is in this stretch of 4 years is better than the Suns. It sounds lame. It's part of the growing process,
yeah, okay.
But it's really frustrating when it's the immediate reaction and follow-up to bordering on a great performance, and then you turn out something like that.
Right, and that's obviously what bothers me profoundly, and I look like that. Okay, they're playing the Pacers-Suns game, and they just did a backdoor cut, and nobody even bothered to play defense. They're not engaged here. Tonight. They weren't engaged last night the way that they have been. And why does that fluctuate? It, to me, it fluctuates because it's collective mindset. Now, you're right. There are other basketball players that don't lift their teams the way Devin Booker may or may not be lifting the Phoenix Suns. But I just find it to be a little weird and coincidental that Devin Booker would return and the team would have one of those nights. That, to me, just red flags everywhere, man. Red flags everywhere. You play the Nuggets and beat the Nuggets without them. You get them back. You get a full practice Monday in Indianapolis, and you don't show up.
But
I don't like the sound of that one.
We have sample sizes on both sides. They're 3-10 without Devin Booker. They are 8-24 with him. So whether you feel he's a winning player or not, or makes players around him better, I mean, the eyeballs can tell you one thing. The numbers can tell you one thing. There's arguments to be made on both sides, I think. Coming up, is Mother Nature the only thing that can keep the New England Patriots from another Super Bowl ring? We'll get into that next. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata. Hash marks.
It's been somewhat chilly in Phoenix. It's starting to warm up a little bit, even though it's been overcast for a few days. But I was downright cold pretty much around the clock for, I don't know, a month, 6 weeks. I could not imagine being in Kansas City this weekend. Site of the AFC Championship game on Sunday, where
no.
Some are predicting it will be the coldest football game ever played.
Yeah. Yes, that I have heard that. I have read that. I'm going to tell you this. As a young kid, I went to a game like that at Soldier Field. And my dad, being the big baller he was, as usual, got us in the last row of the stadium. Okay? I ordered a hot dog that was practically a popsicle. That's how cold it was. And they explained, yeah, here you go, kid. Here's your hot dog. What do you want me to do about it?
Per our earlier discussion, a hot dog is not a good hot food to eat when it's cold.
Thank you. No, it is not. So, and I remember that day going, if I ever have the chance to sit in a stadium on a frigid day or sit on the couch, I'm taking the couch every single time. People in Kansas City, Green Bay, they don't feel like that. Everything about their, I would say Minnesota, but they play indoors. Everything about their esteem and their self-esteem, it's toughness. It's, I can deal with what Mother Nature throws at me, and then they revel in it.
And then they take it to the extreme.
And then they take it to the extreme. And you'll see people out there in Kansas City without shirts on being treated for hypothermia an hour after the game's over. But they'll do it. The question becomes, does this bastardize a huge sporting event? Does this take a sporting event that's supposed to be about football at its highest level and then just completely distort it?
Before we get into the grandiose impact of it, they asked Bill Belichick how it's going to affect the Patriots in his preparation. And, of course, he answered, I'm sure, in flowery, elaborate language. Yeah. Let's hear.
Bill, the forecast for Sunday is temperatures in the single digits, wind chill below zero. How does that impact preparations for the game and perhaps
playing out the game? Yeah, we're getting ready for the Chiefs, whatever it is it is.
Do you mind playing in severe cold?
Love to play in a championship game. Schedule whatever you want. We'll be there.
Does it change the play calling? Does it make it harder to throw?
I don't know. It's Wednesday. We'll see what happens Sunday night. Right now, we're getting ready for the Chiefs.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I don't mean to do this to you, Bick, but I immediately just recalled your comments about Igor Kokoschkov's voice not caring. and the personality.
You can bet the Patriots fear Bill Belichick. To the point where they're sick of being afraid of him.
Oh, he is an unbelievable coach, but man, am I glad we don't have to cover him.
Oh my goodness.
Can't you just, I mean, you hear the guy asking a well-thought-out, detailed question, but somewhere in his head, he has to be thinking, he's never going to give me anything on this, ever.
Yeah. No, that's right. And then props to the guys who have enough chutzpah to kind of like push a line of questioning, knowing that what they're asking is not ridiculous. The head coach is being ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, look, if you're going to ask Bill Belichick about Mike Williams, you better be aware there's another Williams who plays wide receiver on the Chargers. Because then that ain't going to work out well for you.
Elsewhere around the league,
can I share a Bill Belichick story really quick?
Oh, please do.
Here's what's weird about him. and I've experienced this at the Super Bowl. Bill Belichick will have this a moment of sentimentality where he warms up, and he told a story during a Super Bowl about how spiritual it was for him to watch Mark Bavaro and Carl Banks, or some combination of guys, go at it in practice. Because we're talking two great players, Hall of Famers, who just loved the game so much that they gave no quarter in practice. And he gave this answer, and I thought, oh my goodness, here's Bill Belichick speaking about football with this grit, with these tones of romance and love. And I asked a follow-up, and he just went, bzzz. Something in his head said, I just gave the media something, and he recognized a reporter's asking him to go deeper, and he just shut it like a Ziploc bag.
Mm-hmm.
That it's part of him. It is so ingrained in him to give nothing to the media that he can't even help himself. He would be such a great asset to the game if he shared. Because when he does, it's amazing where he can go with a conversation.
Oh, it is true. It's just it's so rare when it happens. You're kind of taken aback by it. Those comments he made about Mark Bavaro, by the way.
Yeah.
Those were made here in Phoenix when they're getting ready for the Super Bowl against Seattle.
That's right.
Elsewhere around the league, we've talked a lot about coaching changes being made, especially here in Arizona. One job that people speculated on that did not come open was Jason Garrett's job in Dallas. They still have not won a divisional playoff game since 1995, I believe, was the last year. It's a high-pressure job. Jason Garrett, still the head coach. Jerry Jones calling the shots, sticking with his head coach. Had kind of an explanation for it.
We've got a very young team. We've got a team that we've got going in a direction. We've got players we've got going in a direction. You make changes, and you're going to change direction. And you may not know if you've got what those particular coaches or that coach has in mind relative to your personnel. Well, when you're sitting here doing contracts on players for years in advance, and you're sitting here with investment and draft picks, stepping up here and making a change each year is tough. I've done that, and I've been there, and I know the price you pay.
It's so funny what's going on in the league right now, because teams like the Cardinals, especially the Cardinals with a one-and-done coach, getting criticism. Where's the patience? Where's his opportunity to shine? And then a lot of the same people are the people that are yelling at, why is Jerry Jones being so patient with Jason Garrett when they're not winning and they're America's team? You can't have it both ways.
No, you're right.
I'm not one to, categorically defend Jerry Jones for the way he runs that operation, but I thought that was a pretty brilliant and thorough discussion of why Jason Garrett's he believes in the direction of the team. That's pretty convincing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Jason Garrett did something this past year because I think, at the midway point of the season, you probably would have bet that his job would have been open. They improved as the year went on.
I have seen Jason Garrett. I've watched entire Jason Garrett press conferences. He's not an idiot. He's not an idiot. He knows what he's talking. Now, is he a puppet? Yes, but he's not an idiot.
But that's when an owner and GM has to figure out where the line is between a good coach who is good every year and, you don't know what you have until it's gone, and a good coach who just can't get the team over the hump, and maybe bringing in somebody else would do that.
Okay.
Like Mark Jackson with the Warriors, for example. They were starting to get good with him, but they felt he wasn't the guy to get him over the hump. They brought in Steve Kerr, and look what's happened. But
true.
Sometimes the other thing is you're good every year, but you don't get over the hump, and you make a change, and then all of a sudden you're not even good every year.
It's one of the great mysteries, and it kind of leads us into our next discussion, but we'll never know what Steve Kerr would have looked like, what the Warriors would have looked like had he got there a year earlier, or if Mark Jackson stuck around. I mean, would that dynasty have started under Mark Jackson? Some argue that it did, and it was just individual improvement by those players with another year. Maybe it was the system. We'll never really know the answer to that question, but I got no problem with Jerry Jones holding on to Jason Garrett. I thought he did a good job overall. Now, should there have been changes on the staff,
yeah,
maybe the offensive staff?
The other example would be like Mike D'Antoni with the Suns, was always really, really, really good, but they thought, like, well, without coaching defense, they're never going to be great. And then they brought in Terry Porter, and then, yeah.
Exactly. Bring five or more non-perishable food items to Talking Stick Resort Arena on January 22nd. You'll receive two tickets to the Suns versus Timberwolves game that night. Text HUNGER to 620-620 for complete details on the Fry's Food Stores and Phoenix Suns Zero Hunger Game benefiting Phoenix Suns charities. Once again, that's HUNGER, H-U-N-G-E-R, to 620-620. Speaking of those Warriors, another reminder that the championship trophy is not going anywhere this year. We'll get into that and more NBA talk next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.